Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so the trade deadline happened, and we're going to get to that. But first, on this recording day, it is the first day of daylight saving time.
We're actually going to talk about daylight.
I think we need to. It's an atrocity that this is still happening.
It's top of mind. Everyone's thinking about it. All right, what's brewing, everybody? This is Chris. I'm here with Cam and Drew. And also we got Lancey.
Oh, hey.
Hell yeah.
This is the Brews and Bruins podcast, the Hockey Podcast Network podcast, presented by PWHL Boston Diehards. What we got for beverages? Drew, you said you got something cool?
Yeah, so I got me a Burger King large Coke that I ordered from DoorDash at 1 a.m. last night, along with a burger that didn't come with cheese. So I threw Hannaford's brand shredded cheese on that shit.
Delivered by Christ himself.
Delivered by Christ himself. My DoorDash driver, Christ.
I have a lot of questions about this, but we'll wait until after you've reviewed this.
37's all around, man. Nothing like a good fountain Coke.
Like, yeah.
I'm iffy on the cans, but the fountain, I'll do.
Yeah. So does anybody like Burger King? I'm putting this question out. Like, is that anyone's first choice? And I don't mean just like the three of you here. I mean, like, anybody in the universe. Is that, like, one's first choice? Because the only time I eat Burger King is when it is the only option I have.
I think the last time I had Burger King was when they gave away the Backstreet Boys live EPs.
Okay.
So that was, like, 20-something years ago.
That's a good reason, though.
I ruined McDonald's for myself, but that's an off pod story. So, but yeah, that's why Burger King's the go to now. Also, it's right down the street. It's nice.
All right. Well, I'm drinking a Spindrift strawberry lemonade, which, and that is also my dog in the background making noise. A little bit of a misnomer here. Lemonade necessitates sugar, and there's no sugar in this, so it's just like a strawberry lemon lime seltzer. More tasteable than most seltzers. You can really taste the lemon and lime. Can't really taste the strawberry, so I'm gonna give it 22 tasteability, and then drinkability, real fizzy. That's what I'll say about it. So it's like, it's drinkable, but it's real fizzy. So, 19.
Glorious. I'm rocking a little polar ginger lime mule seltzer. An elite seltzer, for sure. Very tasty. Good as a mixer as well. Drinkability, 35. Tastability, 12. Good for a seltzer. Great taste, too. Good stuff.
I have some good old-fashioned high-quality H2O. Simply because there is no beer in the house currently. It's a tragedy. But I did have the substance from Bissell Brothers about a week ago when I went out to dinner. So I'll rate that 37s all around. And water, of course, 37s all around.
Shouts to Bissell Brothers, the official brewery of brews and brewings.
In that they let us interview them. That's about
so if there are any breweries out there that want to just sit down for an interview, you too can be the official brewery.
All right, so the trade deadline happened, and we're going to get to that. But first, on this recording day, it is the first day of daylight saving time.
We're actually going to talk about daylight.
I think we need to. It's an atrocity that this is still happening.
It's top of mind. Everyone's thinking about it. I feel awful right now. I'm drinking a non-alcoholic beverage because I have a headache because I didn't get enough sleep last night. And you know what? That sucks. I think we should stop it. I don't know why we do it. There are myths about why we do it, and none of them are true. If you watch the John Oliver Last Week Tonight episode that they did like 3-4 years ago about this.
I think it was like 10 years ago now. But
yeah, you know, maybe it was. I feel really
is
old
this
now.
Why is this a thing? Or how is this still a thing?
I remember they think Congress was trying to pass something involving, you know, making it permanent. Daylight saving time, that is, and making sure we're not switching time back and forth every 6 months. But oh boy, yeah, this sucks. Why are we doing it? Yeah,
I don't know.
It does feel like one of those timekeeping podcast
where, like, if we didn't have it and somebody proposed it, everybody would be like, what the fuck? No, why would we ever do that? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But just because it's been happening for a while, it's like too hard to sway. It needs to end. It's ridiculous. I'm tired too. I couldn't sleep. Ridiculous.
Historically, I've never had any complaints about it, but now I do because I was working on a couple of papers and projects, you know, grad school stuff, and losing an hour just ruined it because it was like, well, I have to go to bed now.
At some point, you do.
Can't take advantage of this extra hour, so I'm going to go to bed, and then I'll just go, you know, work on it later today, due before 11:59.
Yeah, and I'm usually against the, like, going rogue, like, state stuff or like we're the state of liberty and we're going to do our own thing, but Arizona really got it right with this.
The yeah. One thing Arizona has done right.
The shitty thing is, though, my friends from high school are planning a video call later, and two of them live in Arizona, so we planned it for 4 p.m Eastern, and then today we were like, wait, does that still work for you? They're like, no, we need an extra hour now because you guys sprung ahead. Like, shit, okay.
So fuck it. Shouts to the NHL's official Twitter for tweeting out the Bobby Orr goal. Solid 2 months early. They just March 10th, 1970, they're claiming that the Bobby Orr goal against the Blues happened. And it was, in fact, May 10th. So they haven't believed that one yet. But
yeah, they used to do the Stanley Cup real early.
Yeah.
It did occur in March in like 1920.
Yeah, well, there are only 5-6 teams or whatever. So,
also, they had literal, you know, winter to consider versus when it gets warmer out and they don't have the ice making machines that they do now.
I'll let this dog outside.
The old Daylight Savings and Daiquiris podcast. Some good stuff.
Could go for that right now.
There. Since our host has gone, let's talk shit about him. No, want to go into some of these Bruins trades that happened, these blockbusters. Oh, our host is back. Perhaps we will get his permission. Hey, host.
You know what? Shouldn't we talk about the fact that we're recording this on Tuukka Rask's birthday and Matt Patro's birthday, and they share the same birthday, so obviously it means Matt Patro is good.
Right.
Yeah, you should wear number 40.
You really should.
I don't know. 51 is a pretty good number.
You should wear number 04, like a reverse 40, but keep the zero on there.
Yeah.
That always looks cool in NASCAR. I don't know if it works in hockey.
Does it technically, like, if you use, it's still the number 4. Can you technically wear that? I know you can. I know it's not the same, but it's the same number.
Mm. Yeah, we'll see if Bobby Orr thinks it's okay.
It's up to him.
Give Matty Potts a couple of years and then check in. All right, trade deadline. We're gonna get to it. Bruins played a game. Bruins have played two games since the last time we recorded. I didn't listen to the whole episode you guys did with Oliver. Good job.
Mostly P Dub. Yeah.
I assume since you guys were recording like a little before and during the Leafs game, you guys didn't cover much of it, but I think it's absolutely hilarious that the Leafs, despite, you know, having a good roster with good players on it, can't beat the Bruins this year. And there's a decent chance they end up playing the Bruins in the playoffs. Very excited. I know last year we talked about the Leafs as a potential first round opponent, and I was very pro. I feel vindicated on that because obviously the Bruins did not win in the first round. I think anytime the Bruins can play the Leafs in the first round, I'm for it. Don't care how good they are. They're never going to beat the Bruins in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah. I think it was funny. I saw like a Leafs fan, like angry tweeting about like, yeah, we don't, you know, we don't celebrate the regular season wins. And I was like, oh, I got some bad news for you there, Chief. Like it's you might want to double check the stats on that one there, but shouts to the Since Leafs Last Cup account on Twitter for informing me that it's now been 492 days since the Leafs beat the Bruins. That that's hilarious.
That's a while. That's more than a year. Just math wise.
Wow. Time keeping podcast.
That's just blowing my mind. Hours.
No, but like a little bit of, I don't want to say panic, but like, you know, there was a lot of people calling for a lot of things with the Bruins hitting a little bit of a rough patch over the last month or so. And I mean, a couple of pretty convincing wins since then. You know, for all the jokes, Toronto, pretty good team, at least. Good win, Pittsburgh. Not quite in the same realm right now, but still a pretty dominant performance there. So nice to see the ship coming back on track here.
Dominant,
as I like to say, when a team is a team that you're supposed to crush and you crush them, you're doing a good job.
Yeah, you're not supposed to give up.
They got outshot like 2-1 against the Penguins, but they still won 5-1. That's still considered crushing them, even if your defense is a little bit, you know, not at the top of their game.
In fairness, it was nice to see Linus play well after we'll get to the trade deadline.
We'll just but keep also, previewing, you know, it and then never talk about it.
Oh, yeah, you were late, Lancey. We already made that joke, and that's what we're doing.
Right?
It's so like the quality opportunities. There were a couple of like high quality opportunities from the Penguins, but also like that 40 shot amount might be a little inflated by some. Hey, one of those low quality opportunities actually went in. Chris Letang took one from the point, and Linus never saw it, and it just kind of went in. But those are a lot of the types of shots that were being peppered on him. But I mean, Linus made a lot of really good saves, but 5 goals on 20 whatever shots, not going to happen in most games, but you love to see it.
And that's where, you know, my main concern about potentially playing Toronto in the first round is everyone's like, oh, but they destroyed them in the regular season. Doesn't mean anything. You get to the playoffs and people will be quick to point out, you know, last year with Florida. Oh, yeah, well, the regular season doesn't mean anything because in the playoffs, you know, it's a whole new ball game or hockey game in this case. But, you know, at some point, Toronto will beat Boston. They just haven't done it since like the 1930s or 50s.
Nope. It's never going to happen. Not once.
I would love it if the Leafs continue to be like the Chicago Cubs and just, you know, we have to have a team in sports that suffers every year. My apologies to the entire city of Toronto, some wonderful people from there, but the Leafs have to lose. You had the Raptors win a few years ago. Be happy about that.
I like the Raptors. I have no problem with Toronto. I just find their hockey team and the fans, the like sports radio listening fans, like we have them too in Boston. We have them in droves, but you know, those types of fans that Cam was kind of talking about going on there and talking shit on Twitter. Like, I don't like them. So
won't there always be a team that goes like at least 30 years without a cup because of how many teams are in the league? Like if every team won it in a row and everyone was an equal, just like the 30 would be that. So I hope they keep going on forever and they're that team. I'm thinking mathematically someone has to be at least 30, right? No. I'm trying to confirm this as the...
Well, especially when you start adding a 33rd, a 34th, a 35th, and a 36th team, then one of those teams is just never going to win.
Drew, I love that you've become a big math guy over the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's
calculating out how many seasons you'd need to score 100 points to get to 1500.
Good times.
Let's see if you get 10 points a year in the next 50 years.
Oh, yeah. I almost forgot. The Brews and Bruins podcast is sponsored by DraftKings. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. It says to mention the available lines, but you can check that out yourself on the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets only in DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright symbol, copyright NHL 2024, all rights reserved. All right,
trade deadline talk. Vegas Golden Knights, what the hell? They got,
it's totally legal. Okay, totally legal.
My huge two fan top fan targets, they got each of my two top targets, Anthony Mantha and Noah Hanifin, when we did our trade deadline preview. And they added a guy that I didn't even know was going to be dealt, who would have been my absolute top target, Tomas Hertl. That sucks. I love that they do this every year. I think it's funny when hockey Twitter gets all up in a tizzy about them using their LTIR. I mean, Mark Stone's going to be hurt every year, so good on him. Either Mark Stone or Jack Eichel will be on LTIR for them to use that space for. And that's part of being strategic about it. You know, sign players who are good, who will be hurt for most of the season.
Yeah. Or hurt
to
them
your
yourselves.
Point. Yeah. To your point, Chris, Toronto, if you're so mad about it, why didn't you try to acquire Mark Stone in 2019? You could have had him. You'd be doing this, and then you'd be saying, oh, no, it's totally fine. The Leafs can get away with it. Because, yeah, it's legal. It's fine.
Vegas is the best team in the league at going out and getting players, and it's a template for other GMs to follow, and they still haven't been doing it. Go out, sign the best free agents, figure out the cap later. Like, there are ways to do it. And teams have been bending over backwards to help the Knights figure out their cap situation. And, but I mean, they've been unafraid to deal big prospects, and prospects most of the time don't pan out. So you're looking at the list of guys that Vegas has traded, and you're like, I mean, Nick Suzuki's good. And, you know, not much has come out of that. Well, that was Max Pacioretty deal. But, you know, they turned around and signed free agents, and they traded for Mark Stone and traded for Jack Eichel. Like, go get the good players. And the Bruins have been unwilling to do that. And I'm excited to see them not do it again this year.
Where that mostly goes back to is the role of a general manager in sports, right? Everyone thinks like, oh, they have the best interest winning the cup, winning whatever respective championship in whatever sport. And that's not always the case, because the GM is worried about keeping their job. So they have to go to the owner and say, what are your goals for the season? And if the owner says, bring me a cup, then all right, free reign, do whatever. And if the owner says, I'm not too concerned about winning the cup, then you have the major ethical dilemma of, do I go for it and swing and miss and get fired, or do I play it safe? So again, Toronto, maybe look at your owners a little bit.
It is a little surprising when you like to talk role of GM, like short-term success versus long-term success, right? Like most GMs, I imagine, especially on winning teams, are thinking very much in the short term because realistically they're not going to be there for 10 to 15 years, right? So it's a little more surprising that you don't see teams kind of go all in like that a little bit more, thinking, you know, I don't care if I trade the 2028 first round pick we have right now because I'm going to be gone anyway. That's somebody else's problem kind of thing.
Right.
It is a little more surprising that you don't see more GMs kind of be a bit more aggressive with that sort of thing and try to win during the couple of years span that they might have in, you know, calling the shots and then, you know, let somebody else figure out what the problem is later on.
Yeah, and credit to Don Sweeney for doing that last season. I think, you know, identifying this team is historically good. Why don't we add to it? And went out, made some moves. And then in addition to that, when Taylor Hall was injured, went out and got Tyler Bertuzzi as well. That's going all in. And that's one of the reasons why you don't have a lot of assets to trade from this year and in the future, which is what makes it all the more frustrating giving up a third round pick in a deal for Andrew Peak.
Mm-hmm. No salary retained.
Yeah. So Derek Forbort is likely out for the rest of the year. Apparently needs some kind of surgery or something. So I guess the move was to get Andrew Peak and Pat Maroon. I'm not mad about the Pat Maroon deal. I don't think he's a good hockey player, but like, I don't know. The one thing I saw was like with losing Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci, like your leaders in the room are your best players right now. And you know, having to lead the team on the ice and off the ice has been a lot for those guys. So maybe having somebody who doesn't play a lot of minutes, who can take on a leadership role, can be beneficial. And like, fine, whatever. Didn't really give up anything for him, so I'm not mad about it. And there's not really anybody on the fourth line where I'm like, this guy needs to be in the lineup or else we're going to lose in the playoffs. So, I'm not pissed off about that. I am a little mad about giving up multiple assets to acquire a guy who has a bad contract, who was, I guess it's not a bad contract, but it's money, and he was being healthy scratched on a bad Blue Jackets team.
Yeah.
You want to talk about incompetence in leadership? Columbus is a classic example of that. Getting Andrew Peak should have just been, you know, here's Jacob Zboril or here's a draft pick. And instead it was both.
Right.
And so Columbus actually did a good thing, which is shocking to see because they've done many bad things this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pissed about that third. I'm with you. It should have been one or the other.
Like, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't mean that much given third round picks typically don't make it. That's about the cutoff for, you know, prime NHL talent coming out of the draft. However, it's still one of those things where you're just looking at price on deadline day and you're like, this should not have been this much.
Well, true, but also that's a third round pick in 2027 that you can't use to trade for assets at the deadline next
year. When you're going
to
be competitive. Or the
year after. Right. And that's asset management. Like if you're looking at it from that player is probably not going to be a player, fine. Yeah. Like it's probably not going to make a big difference. But then if you're dealing at the deadline next year, you got to figure out other picks to deal. And for a team that already has a pretty shallow prospect pool, you know, just getting bodies on the ice in the minor leagues, like that's useful.
Yeah, I mean, there's the whole fog of war effect in that we don't know what they see in Andrew Peak necessarily, if he's going to be reformed at all by entering the Bruins system, and the fact that he's a pending UFA, right? You got to re-sign him. And, you know, what does that mean in the process of the reclamation project that you're taking on? No.
I thought he wasn't a pending UFA.
Well, he's got like 1 year on his deal, I think. Point being that, you know, Derek Forbort's probably gone in the offseason. A lot of other restructuring is going to happen. And then you have to somehow fit Andrew Peak in there.
He has two more seasons at $2.75 million a year.
Or you don't fit him in there. And it's a huge question mark given the backlog of 6, 7, and 8 guys that you currently have. Yes, even with trading Zboril out of the picture, you still have Ian Mitchell, you still have Alec Regula. You have Parker Weatherspoon, who shouts to him getting a 1 year extension. He should be in the top six among defenders now and for next season. But, you know, there's always a chance if he regresses at all, is Peak your guy?
Yeah, I was trying to find like a silver lining in this Peak thing, diving into like all his background stats. I went on his NFL or his NHL Edge page to see if he was like particularly good at any one thing. And he's like, you can't even see the dots on his like web thing because they're all in the middle. Like he's bottom of the league in skating speed, skating bursts, shot speed, shooting percentage, like all that stuff. And none of his defensive stats look particularly promising. So I don't know. You're hoping third pairing won't kill you on defense kind of guy. But I'll say the one thing I saw when I was looking was like maybe better 5-on-5 defensively than he's getting credit for because he's been so bad on the penalty kill. And that's been kind of driving down his, you know, if you look at like his defensive war stats on several different sites, like it's pretty low, but he's been like awful on the penalty kill. So maybe keep him away from the penalty kill.
Right.
Bit of a head scratcher all around, I would say. Was not expecting that one.
Are you guys like upset that Sweeney didn't make a bigger splash this year? Or did you see the prices around the league and say kind of?
Yes.
Hard no.
Hard yes.
I don't think so. I mean, I think zoom out a little bit. I said this in the group chat, but I think this, I mean, look, like Sweeney made all the right moves at last year's trade deadline, I think. And look what happened, right? That doesn't always equal enough to actually get it across the line. This year is obviously, I think, very transitional still. I think, you know, obviously, if you have a chance to win the cup, you kind of need to go for it to some extent. But I also think that doesn't mean you should fully buy in and you know, potentially jeopardize the future for a team that could make a run, but realistically probably not going to make it even to the conference final, maybe conference, you know what I mean? Let alone to the Stanley Cup final. This year is largely, I think, the other shoe dropping from last year. And I think, you know, this team is competitive enough that they have a chance at least. But I don't think you want to overpay too much looking into the future for this year's team. I think, you know, there's still a couple of pieces missing. If they could have done something crazy and like stolen a top line center or something like that, but you know what I mean? But that's so expensive. That's such a hard move to make, especially at the deadline when everything's inflated. So
yeah, there really wasn't a market for a center until Hurdle got dealt. And then you're like, well, if he was available, that you like, should have done that.
Yeah. But, yeah, I just don't know what realistically move they could have made without giving up quite a bit. And I don't think this year's team is necessarily the one that you really want to, you know, overpay with, I would say.
I'm disappointed just because like getting guys like Peak and Maroon, like sure, you need to add some depth anyway. People are going to get injured. You already have Forbort out, so you need a replacement there. Yeah, get a veteran presence, whatever. And then I was thinking just, got to be a third move that's going to be it. I don't even mean like someone who's going to put up like 30 goals is a 30 goal, you know, a season scorer, but just like someone who I know is going to be in that lineup. Like, yeah, this guy game one of the playoffs, he'll be on our third line. Like just something to bolster their ranks like that. I was really hoping for not expecting anything like, you know, they get Taylor Hall, they get Lindholm, they get Zaka, you know, all those past transactions, just something more. So I was let down by that. But I mean, I guess we'll see. I totally see the point of, you know, you don't want to invest too much in this year. And also you are feeling the pain of having just done that. But I still think unless, you know, the assets they had, no one wanted to bite on Jake DeBrusque. And we've mentioned, you know, the younger players, Lowry, Lacco, Beecher. If no one was biting, I guess, you know, that's not on them. But I really thought with those assets that they had, they'd get something. And the third pick again for Peak is just like, come on, that was like a desperation move. Like that was like, we gotta get this, we gotta get something done because Forbert's going out. So yeah, fucking take the third and Zboril.
You could have maybe used that third pick to get a top nine forward, like, you know, Yakov Trenin, who went to Colorado, or Anthony Duclair, who went to Tampa, whether you consider them a true top nine or not. That's the type of player I was expecting them to get in addition to a guy like Pat Maroon. And so I'm somewhere between Cam and Drew in terms of, you know, expectations versus reality and or disappointment.
Yeah, I'm with you, Lancey. I mean, Duclair would have been a nice get.
Even Alex Wennberg.
I think Wennberg, another guy you want to keep far, far away from the penalty kill, but is a pretty good defensive forward. And brings a lot of hotness per 60. But
off the charts.
I don't know. I think if there is a year not to go all in, I think maybe just kind of trusting your team vibes and the organizational depth in terms of like proven NHL players is pretty low, but you do have a lot of guys in Providence who can come step in if someone gets injured. And I'm not like, I don't think Oscar Steen is going to be, you know, a problem if you put him on the fourth line in a playoff game. You know, I think Brezzo has been really good. I think, you know, we could expect Beecher to come in and play solidly on that fourth line. Like I think we've been talking about center depth as though it's an area that needs to be addressed, but I think guys have stepped up so much that feel pretty confident that straight down the line, you know, you got Jesper Boqvist as your fourth line center. Like that's pretty good. I'd be comfortable with him centering the third line at this point. Morgan Geeky's turned into a really good center. I mean, and having Trent Frederick there to kind of support as a guy who knows how to play center also works. So I'm not as worried about that. I think the one guy I would have wanted to target is Hanifin, but once again, if you feel like you can sign him in the offseason, I think that's a little trusting because, you know, most guys, when a team trades for them, will eventually re-sign with that team. And I think especially Hanifin going to a place where, you know, Jack Eichel is already, and, you know, a guy who had long been thought to be on his way to Boston at some point. You know, when he becomes a free agent, obviously he's signing in Boston because he's a Boston guy. And, you know, it's a little dangerous to be thinking that guys will always go to their hometowns when they become free agents. But, you know, if you think you can get Hanifin in the offseason, makes little sense to overpay for him at the deadline. I don't know. I think would have been nice to get a couple of guys, but I think, you know, this team's not great, but I think they're pretty good and have you'd be a little goofy to think that this team has zero chance at winning the cup. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe the most important trade that happened was the trade that didn't happen. The Linus Ullmark nixing the assumed to be Pierre-Luc Dubois deal. I think that's a thing where maybe this team that's kind of been floating through the back half of this season kind of galvanizes itself around that. Like Linus played really well. Everyone was super happy he was there. Kind of one of those things where it's just like, this guy is one of us. This guy that we need to all like come around and show our GM how stupid it would have been to trade this guy. So,
I mean, it raises a huge question of has Don Sweeney lost the room? Which, of course, you could go back to last year and say, yeah, when a lot of other things happened. And, you know, it just goes back to a couple of things when you consider the overall picture of the Bruins in their transition point. the vibes of last season to this season different from the vibes of 2009-10 to 2010-2011. And, you know, I think a lot of people tend to forget that against Montreal going into game seven in the first round in 2011, if they had lost, just how different things could have been. They might have fired Claude Julien. They might have moved on from Pierre Chiarelli. I know Chiarelli, long-term, not that good of a general manager overall. Still won a cup, though. Give him some credit. But, you know, similarly, Don Sweeney's reaching that point where if they lose embarrassingly in the first round, just absolute repeat of last season in the collapse, then you have to see him out of there. And you're not so much going to Jim Montgomery and saying, you know, you can pack your things too. It's more like a Pittsburgh Penguins situation where you change the GM, try out the coach for a season, and then, you know, you get your one chance to improve things. But overall, you know, 2009 to 2010, I've got my birthday coming up thinking on the brain. But from that year, you know, you had the tweaks of Dennis Weidman out for Nathan Horton and Gregory Campbell in. And then at the deadline, you go get Thomas Caberle, Chris Kelly, Rich Peverly. Oh, what, look at that. You know, you have Caberle, the top name that everyone was trying to get. Kelly and Peverly, guys that really fit in the top nine forward role and play a huge role down the stretch. This year, you go from the greatest regular season team in NHL history, not, you know, on paper speaking, but the record that they produced, because I don't know how many Hall of Famers there actually were on the team last year. Two, yes, you have all the overhaul in the offseason and the roster turnover itself, but the tweaks that you needed to make were small in comparison. You went all in last year. You weren't necessarily going from the colossal collapse against Philadelphia to, look, we got to go out there and prove everybody wrong and take this thing. This year, it's, yeah, that was embarrassing, but we are in no way, shape, or form the same team that can go and take this thing. So, you know, overall, it's a little disappointing, but also a little bit what you expect.
Mm-hmm.
And how the next month or two play out will be what determines the next 2 or 3 years down the road. Because a guy like Linus Ullmark, fantastic human being, love him with every fiber in my body. But there is a decent chance you move him in the offseason because you don't want to tend to pay goaltenders $10 million or more in the salary cap era and, you know, try to build out the rest of your roster. So moving him at the deadline would have been a boneheaded move, regardless of if you say, well, if it was Pierre Dubois, you know, what's his attitude? I'm not getting into that. Save that for another day. But Ullmark is, yes, in a way, the whole vibe of the team, but he's better than any other backup that you're going to have. It's, you need him for this run wherever it ends up, and then you can make a decision afterward.
Yeah, Cam got a match penalty for bad-mouthing officials, so he's not with us anymore. He'll be watching the rest from the locker room. I agree to an extent. I think you can survive 1 year of Ullmark being paid $5 million to be a backup, considering the amount of cap space the Bruins have. But maybe he gets shipped out in the offseason. But you know what? This might be a year just to test and see how the vibes carry. See if all the besties can hold together and grind out a cup run.
The Boston besties.
Yeah, I think you wind up moving Ullmark this summer, but I didn't like that they went for it now. I mean, I also don't know what else was really involved in that deal. Like, if Pierre-Luc Dubois was like in that package, like the best talent we are getting back, then that, I don't think that makes sense. I don't know. Like, you can throw like good picks around it, but why are we going for like picks at this point? I don't know. Like, that's a sign of we're looking at next year. We're not looking at this year at all, which the other moves they made to, you know, replace Forbert and add a veteran guy who's going to hit on your fourth line, that speaks like I'm gearing up for the playoffs because I know we're going to have injuries and we already do. And yay, veteran presence. Oh my God, playoffs. It's like so hot. Sorry. That's how some people think.
On the continuum of deadline acquisitions on the blue line, is Andrew Peak more Mike Motto or John Michael Lyles?
Is he more Hitty Checkerson or Big Body?
Exactly.
Big Body.
Yeah. Anything else to add? All right, go Bruins.
I off the top of my head.
Thanks for listening. This has been a depressing trade deadline.
Brought to you by Daylight Savings.
Gotta keep it light, Chris.
It was really exciting for some teams. Shouts to Vladimir Tarasenko already killing it with the only team he wanted to go to.
Right.
And I looked it up. Tomas Hertl had a full no move clause, so like he got to pick wherever he wanted to go. So I assume that's why it was
he could have played with David Pastrnak. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think if the Bruins had like two or three more Czech players, they would be ready for a cup, but not as is.
Huge Czechia guy.
All right. Bye.